Heading to CBC? Make sure to stop by booth 1989 to chat with the Brewbound team, check out our live podcast recordings, and find out about Brewbound's upcoming events. Have news to submit ahead of the show? Head to brewbound.com/submitnews to let us know about your latest updates.
Hey there, welcome back to the Brewbound podcast. I'm Jessica Infante, and this is episode 23 of season 3. The Brewbound podcast has been showcasing our weekly live-streamed conversations with leaders from across the beer industry, a series we are calling Brewbound Frontlines. This week, we've got a special two-part Frontlines episode for you. Our first conversation is with the team from Weathered Souls Brewing in San Antonio, Texas. Co-founder and head brewer Marcus Baskerville and sales and marketing manager Kimberly Machado joined me and Brewbound editor Justin Kendall to discuss Black is Beautiful, the national collaboration beer they announced 2 weeks ago. We talked about it on the podcast last week, but if you missed it, Black is Beautiful is an imperial stout that brewers from across the country are brewing and then adding their own creative twist to. Then they're asked to donate proceeds from sales to organizations that work to end police brutality or provide legal defense assistance to people who have been wronged by the system. While the beer certainly aims to raise money, an almost bigger goal is that Marcus hopes it will spark conversations and raise awareness to the injustices that racism causes people of color to face every day here in the U.S. As of this recording, almost 550 breweries in 43 states and 14 countries have signed up. If you are on the fence about doing this at your brewery, take a listen to this conversation. Marcus has gotten so much support from ingredient suppliers, barrel suppliers. There's discounts on just about everything that you need to make this beer. The label is already done for you. It is gorgeous. All you need to do is sign up and make it. Visit blackisbeautiful.beer to join the cause. Our next guest is Jason Murphy, who is the Beverage Innovation Manager for Buffalo Wild Wings, who I'm sure you know pours more draft beer than anyone else in the country. If you make beer or sell beer, Jason is definitely someone you need to know, and he definitely wants to hear from you. You'll hear him say it in our conversation, but just to reiterate, email Jason to talk about getting your beer into B-dubs. His email address is jmurphy@inspirebrands.com. When you do email him, tell him I said hi, and then give him your take on whether or not boneless wings count as real wings. I am conducting an experiment. In other beer news this week, the Anheuser-Busch InBev and Craft Brew Alliance merger took one more step toward completion. To gain regulatory approval, CBA agreed to divest itself of its Kona operations and sales in Hawaii. That will be sold for $16 million to PV Brewing Partners. Once the deal goes through, AB will retain rights to sell Kona in the rest of the U.S. and internationally. You can read all about it at brewbound.com. Something that we've covered extensively has been the way that the COVID-19 pandemic has canceled basically every beer event that was to happen in 2020, which is a huge bummer. But we've seen a lot of creativity pop up to keep people connected over beers, even in the time of social distancing. One of the more innovative virtual events that's come through our newswire is happening on Thursday, June 18th. The Massachusetts Brewers Guild is hosting an online variety show that will raise money telethon style. Brewers from all over Mass are participating with tasting videos, behind-the-scenes tours. There's a few musical guests. Head over to the Mass Brewers Guild Facebook page to check it out. Another in-person festival that's had to reimagine itself for 2020 is Fresh Fest, which is now going digital. Fresh Fest is in its third year, and it's the country's first beer festival to highlight and showcase Black breweries. To participate in Fresh Fest, other breweries or other interested brands need to collaborate with a Black brewer or an artist, entrepreneur, or politician from the Black community. The fest usually takes place in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but this year it's all digital, and tickets went on sale on Monday, June 15th. They're $10 and get you access to a whole day of entertainment. There's live music, comedy, art, beer education. It's all going to be happening on August 8th. One of the founders of Fresh Fest is Dave Bracey. He's a comedian and a podcaster, and he joined us last December in Santa Monica for Brewbound Live. His conversation with Justin is definitely worth a watch. They talked all about how the beer industry can foster stronger relationships with the Black community. Dave is also hilarious, and you can find him on Twitter at Bracey Dujour. He makes me laugh at least twice a day, so definitely go smash that follow button. The last tidbit I learned this week, which I found really interesting, came from Randy Ornstein, who is the director of alcohol at GoPuff, the e-commerce on-demand virtual convenience store that will bring you almost whatever you want in 30 minutes or fewer. Randy joined the Beer Institute this week for a webinar and shared this fun fact. The GoPuff warehouse on 12th Street in Philadelphia is the number one retailer of White Claw in the nation. That is wild. Of course, Gritty's hometown goes that crazy for White Claw. Not even really sure why I was surprised. Okay, here is Brewbound Frontlines with Kimberly and Marcus from Weathered Souls and Jason from Buffalo Wild Wings.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Brewbound Frontlines, our weekly live stream check-in with beer industry leaders on the changes they're making during the COVID-19 crisis and the ways they're pushing forward. I am Justin Kendall, the editor of Brewbound, the man with the coronavirus curls, and I'm joined by the pride of New Jersey, Jess Infante, for today's discussion. Hey Jess, what's up?
Hi, Justin. I think that's the highest compliment I've ever received.
That's why I'm here. Today, we're bringing
I don't know what New Jersey agrees, though.
I don't care. So we can just push forward with that as a fact. So today, we are bringing you two conversations that were recorded earlier this week. First, we'll be chatting with Marcus Baskerville and Kimberly Machado from Weathered Souls Brewing Company in San Antonio, Texas, about the launch of the Black is Beautiful collaboration beer program that is bringing awareness to the injustices that many people of color face daily and raising money for organizations working to end police brutality, as well as fund legal defenses. And in our second conversation, we'll be discussing how Buffalo Wild Wings, the largest pourer of draft beer in the U.S., is reopening its hundreds of stores, actually thousands of stores across the country, and what it means for craft brewers who want to be on the chicken wing chain's tap handles. Joining us to discuss will be Jason Murphy, Beverage Innovation Manager for Buffalo Wild Wings. So hang out for both of these conversations. One final bit of housekeeping before we start, a plug for next Thursday's Frontlines. Join us at 3 p.m. Eastern time at brewbound.com. We'll have four fast-growing Massachusetts breweries with us, the founders and leaders of Castle Island, Vitamin C, Jack's Abbey, and Wormtown Brewery will be here. Jess and I will be discussing the growth of those companies in 2019, how COVID-19 altered their 2020 plans, and much more. So let's get to our first interview with the team from Weathered Souls.
Hey, Marcus. Hey, Kimberly. How are you guys today?
We're doing fantastic. How are you this morning?
Good, thanks. So, I mean, we've seen a number of nationwide cause-driven collaboration beers in recent years for various causes, from Russian River and Sierra Nevada, leading the charge to raise money for victims of California wildfires through Sonoma Pride and Resilience Initiatives. We've also seen recently Other Half in Brooklyn, New York, launched Altogether, which aim to raise money for hospitality workers who were facing the loss of income due to restaurant and bar closures because of COVID-19. One of the latest collaboration launched by Weathered Souls, our friends down in San Antonio, Texas, aims to support causes that are fighting to end police brutality and provide money for legal defense funds, as Justin said. So joining us today from Weathered Souls, as we've just chatted with, we have Marcus Baskerville, who's the co-founder and head brewer, and Kimberly Machado, the sales and marketing manager. Marcus, you and I chatted last week about this, and Black is Beautiful as the collaboration was your brainchild. So why don't you share with the audience today your vision for the project and your goals?
Yeah, so what our vision is basically, it's kind of like you said, similar to the All Together initiative. And what we want to do basically is bring all the breweries together to raise awareness for inequality and injustices. And so basically, what my thought process is to bring all these breweries together to initiate this collaboration. But in the end of the day, what it's going to do is create conversation amongst their communities since they're donating locally. And then it's also going to offer some of these other breweries a means to start allowing persons of color, Black people, and other demographics to possibly, you know, start working for them in other avenues along those lines.
Malt Europe Malting Company is North American proud with premium grains from field to flavor. Our selections include base, specialty, and distillers malt varieties, stop by our booth 2143 at the Craft Brewers Conference in Vegas. Does your brewing software suck? We've heard it from thousands of brewers. Connect with Ollie today and we'll buy out your current contract and hook you up with brewing software that doesn't suck. Visit booth 1685 at CBC or hit getollie.com/pod.
As of this conversation, almost 500 breweries in 43 states and 11 countries have signed on to brew Black is Beautiful. What were your expectations for the turnout on this?
Definitely wasn't that. I think originally I told Kim that we were going to get around maybe 150 to 200 breweries, but we ended up hitting that number on day two. So the response has actually been pretty humbling because I definitely wasn't expecting to receive the amount of response that we did.
Great. And what's been the reaction from people in the beer industry, both in terms of employees and consumers? What are you guys hearing?
It's been wonderful as far as the response so far. You see a lot of the consumers tagging their favorite breweries and local breweries in the initiative to get them involved. Also, from the employee aspect, I've had a lot of Black brewers and Black employees reach out to me just to say thank you for giving them the opportunity to somehow, you know, get further involved with their brewery and their community.
I definitely think it's more powerful because it's organically. We're not reaching out to breweries and everybody's just doing it just by, you know, the consumers, the customers are tagging that, like Pete said, like it's a lot more powerful and meaningful.
So are you guys going to cap it or are you going to keep it open for a certain amount of time and allow breweries to sort of join on throughout the year?
Well, social injustice and inequality is not going anywhere anytime soon. So we plan to keep it on as long as possible. We're hoping that basically what this turns into is it's not just, you know, a brewery brews the beer and then that's their way of helping. I mean, you know, obviously the donations are great, but for further change, obviously that communication needs to stay open and that drive needs to continue. And so as far as the initiative itself, I don't think it's going to go anywhere anytime soon.
So what kind of support have you received from other industry partners, such as wholesalers or ingredient suppliers?
So the reception for that has been awesome. We've received a lot of support from a lot of the wholesalers and retailers that we use. So BSG, for instance, is offering 2,200 pounds for free. All you have to do is pay for shipping. YCH is offering, Yakima Cheese is offering hops with a discount. Imperial Yeast, White Labs is offering yeast 25% off for anybody who participates. Midwest Barrel Company is offering anybody who participates Willett barrels at cost, which was authorized by the Willett Distillery. They use the promo code Black is Beautiful. So, I mean, and there's obviously been more, and we'll be sending out some newsletters to all of the breweries that are involved so they can kind of see some of the awesome deals that they can get to offset some of the costs for the beer.
That's really great to hear. I'm so glad you guys have gotten that much support from the industry. Now, there's been a little bit of chatter on social media, and I feel like people kind of, they know there's so much to be done and like everybody needs to be doing much more than we all ever have been. So some people might feel that perhaps just buying a four pack isn't enough. What would you say to those people about how this can actually be a first step?
So like you said, it's exactly that, a first step. So, you know, buying a four pack may not be enough in their minds, but, you know, that four pack, that person's going to share that beer with somebody else who might not know about the initiative, might not know about the local support that the breweries are giving, and might not even know about the organizations that they're donating to. So, you know, this beer in general and the overall initiative is bringing awareness to all of that. So, you know, dealing with where we need to get to as a society, you know, if we have to take baby steps to get there, then obviously, you know, I mean, it needs to obviously get there a lot sooner, but, you know, baby steps count just as much as any step.
This industry is at baby steps at the moment as well. The larger brewing industry or craft brewing industry still has a lot of work to do when it comes to diversity, inclusion, and equality. And as much as folks would like to believe it's getting there, you know, like I said, it still has a lot of work to do. In what ways can the industry evolve and become more welcoming?
I think somebody that does a really good example of that is Tired Hands. So they have like the overall internship where they hire somebody of color and then basically trains them to go into whatever path they want to go into in the brewing industry and then helps them find a job. you know, initiatives, programs like that, obviously of assistance, but, you know, even opening conversation and trying to understand the employees that you have, you know, implementing programs that offer equality training is another thing that can assist. So, you know, some of these additional things along with just brewing the beer, you know, obviously is going to kind of guide us into the right direction as far as what the industry needs to go to.
Great. I mean, other than those initiatives, actually, I'm not going to ask that question because you basically just answered it. What's the craft beer scene like in San Antonio? Is it more diverse than in other parts of the country?
It has become diverse. So as far as people of color in San Antonio, we have myself, we have Isla Street Brewing, which is a Mexican Hispanic brewery. And then Matt Pecker has a Hispanic brewer, Ray. So yeah, I mean, you know, it's obviously growing. Us personally, we've always had a diverse staff. People of all color are obviously employed here. And so, you know, we just try to keep that culture and spread it around. So as these newer breweries and stuff are popping up, we see a lot more diversity getting involved.
Marcus, you mentioned injustice is unfortunately not going away. Looking ahead to the future, could Black is Beautiful become an annual collaboration event?
So that's what the hopes are. We're going to do it annually. We've already had a few breweries reach out to us about doing a barrel-aged version. So, you know, obviously those take some time. We're doing a barrel-aged version ourselves. So hopefully we start seeing within the next year some of those beers coming out and a whole nother, you know, pop-up of these beers start to basically come into fruition as, you know, the time goes on.
Great. And when do you guys expect to have the first version of the beer ready for sale?
So our version of the beer will be coming out 4th of July.
Cool. What do you expect for your barrel-aged version?
Barrel-aged version, typically we try to give barrel-aged beers at minimum 11 to 12 months. So it'll probably be exactly a year from now. And we'll probably release it again 4th of July.
So for those who haven't signed up yet, how can they get involved?
So they can go to blackisbeautiful.beer. There's a link for consumers and people who just want to support. And then there's a link for breweries. The breweries that want to get involved, please fill out the form. And then all that information comes to us so we can get everybody added to the website. And then the same thing for consumers. In the next few days, we're going to start sending out newsletters to everybody that's involved so they can start taking advantage of some of these deals and also just share some of the information that we have going on.
For homebrewers, there's a recipe online for them to also participate because we've got a lot of people asking about that.
I hope you get a ton of people signing up. Have you revised your goals on how many people you're hoping to get signed up now?
So my next goal after the 200 was 500. Looks like we're probably going to hit that today. So I'm probably going to extend the goal to 900. We'll see what happens.
Now, Marcus, I know you came up as a homebrewer, so do you guys do any particular outreach to that community?
So I did grow up homebrewing. So yes, as far as our homebrewing community goes, I'm always open to questions, always open the doors to anytime they want to come in. I actually have a phone call conference where I'll be Skyping with the homebrew club tomorrow as they're brewing the Black is Beautiful collaboration, a club that Annie Johnson is a part of. So yeah, you know, you got to always get back to where you started.
So how close are you guys on the reopening status at this point? Are you guys able to do outdoor serving or where are things standing for you guys in San Antonio right now?
So during the pandemic, we were allowed to do curbside to go and delivery. So we implemented that into our plan. And then as of last week, we were able to open the 25%. And then they moved it up to 50% at the end of the week. So we've been operating at 50% capacity since Saturday.
How have you guys been able to, I guess, have you guys been having a sustainable business or has it been hard times like it's been for so many other folks out there?
We were definitely worried about what was going to happen during the pandemic, but our local community and the rest of Texas has been pretty great as far as supporting our brewery and making sure that we were able to keep all of our employees and also sustain our production.
Those initiatives you mentioned, such as to-go and curbside and delivery, do you see those carrying on post-pandemic, even though we're not really post-pandemic?
Yeah, the to-go options has been wonderful for us. So that's actually something that we plan on maintaining for the foreseeable future as long as we can.
Anything else you've got, Jess?
I don't think so. I feel like we kind of covered a lot of it. And I'm sure we'll check in with you guys in a couple weeks too.
Yeah, definitely.
Is there anything you guys want to add that we didn't cover that we should be thinking about with either Black is Beautiful or any of the other programs that you guys have going on?
No, we don't really want to promote the brewery so much. I mean, you know, that's not what this is about. So just everybody, please share and tag your favorite breweries and, you know, reach out to your local breweries and try to get them involved. That's the most important thing.
Well, thank you both for joining us. We really appreciate it.
I know you guys are so busy. So thanks for your time.
I read your guys' articles and stuff that comes through on our emails all the time. So
and the magazine
too. So yeah, it was a pleasure to be on.
Thank you.
Good. Well, we will see you soon then.
Thank you. Cheers.
Thanks,
cheers.
Guys.
Anything we can do to help on this, let us know.
Yeah. Okay. Don't be a stranger.
All right. I won't be.
Thank you.
All right. Thank bye. You.
Okay, we're back. And Jess and I are joined now by Jason Murphy, the Beverage Innovation Manager for Buffalo Wild Wings. Jason, let's set the scene here because Buffalo Wild Wings plays a pretty important role in the beer ecosystem. No other outlet pours more draft beer than B-Dubs. So how much draft beer goes through Buffalo Wild Wings in an average year? And I know that this is not an average year.
A lot. Yeah, you're right. We buy more beer than anybody else. We sell more beer than anybody else. I think the last number I saw was we could fill 60 Olympic-sized pools with the amount of beer that we pour and the amount of kegs that we buy. If you stacked them all on top of each other, we'd get, I think it was like 3/4 of the way to the moon. So we buy quite a bit.
I like your volume metrics. These are not the typical ones that we hear in the beer industry.
Well, so I was prepared for that question, I could have given you a specific pint number because I've seen that before. But the ones that I remember from that specific pint number are elephants, because I know how much our kegs weigh in elephants, and Olympic-sized pools and keg stacked to the moon.
That is fantastic. On a more dour note, this couldn't have been an easy spring for you guys with the loss of the on-premise and pretty much all sports shutting down. No March Madness, no NBA, no NHL, no baseball opening day. I could keep going. And then we got the holidays, St. Patrick's Day and Cinco de Mayo. So roughly, how big of a hit was this for B-Dubs?
It was pretty significant. We were running pretty high. We came off of 2 straight positive quarters of same-store sales, which was the first time we had posted that a positive quarter in 3 years. We did it 2 quarters in a row. And then we were hit with the pandemic right before our busiest season of the year, which is the March Madness tournament. Those are our busiest 3 weeks of the year. So it was pretty unfortunate timing for the momentum of the business that we had. But, you know, just like everybody else in the on-premise, we had to pivot pretty quick and figure out how to convert what was predominantly on-premise business to 100% off-premise business.
Wow. So of B-Dubs 1,250 stores, both corporate and franchise, how many of them are open at this point in some capacity or other?
So in some capacity, I think all of but 10 locations are open for either dine-in and takeout or just takeout. For dine-in, we have a little bit over 50% of our locations currently open.
And then where are those 10?
Oh, they're situated in random places across the country. So I want to say, I think our Mall of America location is still closed because I believe the Mall of America is closed. Other malls across the country, airports. So it's a random 10, but it's for one reason or another. They're just areas that don't draw any to-go traffic or open for on-premise.
Great. So, I mean, you guys have obviously had to make a bunch of pivots. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So when we had to shut down our sports bars, the first week was writing a training manual of how to shut down your draft system. When everything hit, there was so much unknown of how long things would be shut down for, when we'd be able to restart our draft systems. So we had to write a manual of how to properly disconnect everything, how to make sure all your draft system's clean so things aren't screwed up when you reopen, whenever that might be. So that was the first week, was trying to figure that out. And then very quickly after that, it was, okay, how do we try to create some beer sales out of this and generate some BevAlc to go during the pandemic and while consumers are creating their to-go orders. So it took us about a week and a half to pull together a a program that would kind of be one size fits all across the country. We were definitely monitoring. We had a fantastic legal team who was updating us multiple times a day as states were relaxing their guidelines or changing their guidelines for off-premise BevAlk to go. And so we very quickly pulled together a program where we were being able to sell singles and six packs of the packaged beer that we had available. So we didn't do any draft sales. We didn't have any crowlers or growlers or anything that we tried to do. It was all six packs of existing domestic craft import and FMBs that we had in stock. But yeah, we pulled that together pretty quickly and were able to get a program out to our field on the fly, which was nice.
You mentioned the reopening of those 1,240 stores. What does a reopened Buffalo Wild Wings look like at this point?
Very socially distanced. So we, you know, proactively in advance of the states announcing their guidelines, we sent all of our sports bars out schematics of how to reopen their dining rooms and what a reopened dining room should look like. And that's tables 6 feet apart. There's no stools at the bar, so we aren't allowing for any bar seating initially. And then that's making sure that we've got, you know, some cleanliness policies in place as far as, you know, making sure that we have disposable menus for guests who want disposable menus. We also created QR code menus for guests who would rather look at their menus digitally. It's making sure that we've got proper smallwares usage. So if a guest requests disposable silverware instead of the silverware that, you know, we would run through our regular sanitization cleaning process, we have that available. Same goes for draft beer, making sure that, you know, we have disposable draft glasses in place in case someone wants to use that instead of going through our regular glassware process. But it's 360 approach from on everything to make sure that we've got a dining room that our guests are comfortable enjoying again.
Great. So now that the on-premise is coming back, what's the early read that you guys have on customers' willingness to come back? I know like different states are open to different extents. So what are the customers who come in say?
Yeah, it's different per market. It's really tough to get a national read on what's going on. Anecdotally, we've seen guests are really excited to return. They've definitely been excited to get back to the bar. One early success that we've seen is that in the states that we've opened, our guests are spending more at the bar than they had been previously, which is great. I think that was our first guest who wanted to come back was the one who is the regular, the person who's in there a couple times a week, and they were just excited to get back and, you know, reconnect with their friends that they've made at the bar and reconnect with our staff and bartenders. So that was great. The other great thing that's come from this is COVID, I think, forced all companies, especially us, to create off-premise programs that maybe didn't necessarily exist. And the one good thing that we've been seeing since we've reopened our sports bar is we're not losing much from our off-premise business in the states where on-premise is reopened. And the on-premise has been mostly additive to our overall business. So that's been great to see that sustained off-premise success to go along with the ability to reopen our dining rooms and serve guests a great draft beer experience and some hot wings or fresh at their table.
So when people come in, what are they looking for? Are they tending toward draft because that's what you guys are known for? Are they asking for beer in cans? Do they want regular glassware? Are they cool with classic? What's that like?
Yeah, the early read is the guest is looking for the same experience post-COVID that they had pre-COVID. So they're coming in and they're looking for a great tall draft beer served cold in our tall Pilsner glass. Not a huge shift or not a noticeable shift that we've seen yet from draft to package. Like I said earlier, we have glassware, single-use glassware available for consumers who choose to go that route. But the majority of our guests just want to come back and enjoy a Buffalo Wild Wings like they used to.
How are you approaching your purchasing behavior in the short term? Because, I mean, we're in the midst of the initial wave of COVID-19. There's the potential for a second wave in the fall or winter. So are you being extra cautious in your purchasing? Like, how are you approaching it?
We're being fairly cautious, especially with the locations that have reopened. And we're trying to be mindful of a lot of things. One, they're initial traffic likely being significantly lower than what it would have been during normal periods. Also trying to be mindful of the kegs that were already sitting in that cooler before they shut down and how we go through those kegs. And then trying to be mindful of people's kind of drinking habits and what they want to come back to. So purchasing wise, we're from a company perspective, we're really focusing a lot on the national brands that have a proven track record within Buffalo Wild Wings and make up a large majority of our sales. So for the disposable beverage menu that we introduced to our locations that are reopening, that disposable beverage menu includes 10 nationally mandated brands. And of those 10 nationally mandated brands, those make up roughly about 3/4 of our sales. So we feel pretty good about featuring those 10 brands in our locations. One, because they're proven sellers, but two, because they come from some of our best partners and national brewers who we know we're not going to have product stock issues. Those are the ones that our distributors are making sure they have in stock, because as every on-premise location reopens and refills their draft lines, those are the ones that are everybody's most popular brands that they need to bring back in first. But beyond that, we are making sure that we're leaving our draft handles available for localization and regionalization customization. That's a lot of Asians I just used. But so we are leaving 4 additional handles out there for some of our local and regional favorites, the beers that, you know, pop up to the top in any individual location or individual state. And then also being mindful of the beer that they had in inventory before they shut down and making sure they're able to deplete those kegs. So it's pretty complicated. There's not a one-size-fits-all approach, because each market and each location is going to act differently than one location that might be, you know, 10 miles away. So we are leaving a lot of the ownership of draft products up to our individual general managers, district managers across our company, and especially our franchisees as well. But that being said, we do have a set and communicated guidelines that we expect them to act upon to ensure that we don't overextend what we're doing when we reopen and then end up with out-of-code beer and beer that we're having to either dump or get rid of because we just can't go through it quick enough with a decreased amount of traffic.
Oh, that makes sense. So with you guys leaning a little bit more toward national brands, what can small brewers do to make sure that they can get find their way inside, even if there's just 4 draft lines up for rotation?
Yeah, I mean, one question I get a lot from our supplier partners is, are you okay with us selling in your restaurants right now? And I say, yes, definitely so. While we are on a slow and kind of phased reopening approach, we are planning on a return to a normal beverage menu come August 1st, which is just a quick 7 weeks away, which means if I'm an operator thinking about what needs to be on my beverage menu for August 1st, I need to start making those decisions today. So we still do have a commitment to small local regional breweries. We still are, that's our core target moving forward with our beverage and beer program, is to figure out how to better attract the craft beer drinker demographic, and specifically that person who wants to drink that local craft. So communicate it out to our operators is still a stressing the level of importance of making that connection with your local brewery, understanding what their stock levels look like, understanding if they anticipate any sort of out of stock issue, and just making sure we have the right beer for the right guests. And most of the time that includes the small local brewery down the street.
You mentioned out of code beer, and that's been a major issue that's arisen out of COVID-19. How are you guys handling your expiring or out of code beer?
Yeah, we're following pretty closely to what the guidelines that our supplier partners are publishing as far as out of code and returns. So, you know, we see everything that you all post on what our supplier partners are doing, and we're relaying that information to our operators and letting them know which supplier partners are offering discounts. And we're encouraging them to reach out to their distributor partners and ask what their options are for returning out of code kegs. So we would prefer for all of our locations, if they have out of code kegs in their keg coolers, to be able to return those to their distributors. That's step number one. If for whatever reason a distributor isn't accepting out of code kegs, we're asking them to then work with the supplier partner to see if there's anything they can do with that keg to possibly return it. Maybe the supplier will pick up the cost of that, or or figure out how we can return that keg. But then for the kegs that are in code, but maybe getting towards the end of their freshness date, we are asking our beer expert in every one of our sports bars to go through every single tap line, taste every single beer, and make sure it's fit to serve to the guests. So we are taking beer quality and beer freshness very seriously as we reopen our sports bars, because the last thing that we want to do is for someone who's been sitting in their house for, you know, 10 weeks, 12 weeks, and is just waiting for that first draft beer. The last thing we want them to do is show up at a Buffalo Wild Wings and have a poor experience because their beer wasn't fresh. So we're trying to do everything we can to make sure that the beer we have pouring through our draft lines is the freshest and best quality.
That's great. I can't imagine going out for the first time after all of this, because Mass is still not really fully reopened, and ordering a draft beer and having it come and just be like oxidized and diacetyl-y. So I'm really glad you guys are on that. So you mentioned trying to attract more craft drinkers, and that's really what the strategy has been. But how has that strategy changed at all in the short term with everything that's going on?
Hasn't really changed at all in the short term, which is great. That's the one thing I love about this company right now, is we've got a consumer target and we're going after it. We're really trying. We're really focused on that, not only in the short term, but into 2021. So the one thing that really bummed me out the most about having, well, not the one thing, but one of the things that bummed me out the most about having to close down our restaurants, was we debuted our 2020 draft mandate set on March 1st of 2020. And then about 14 days later, all of our sports bars were shut down. So we didn't get to realize any of the successes or wins from that new program from March of 2020, which included a focus on more local brands, a focus on more craft brands, and actually gave our individual sports bar owners, whether that be franchisees or the GMs at your local Buffalo Wild Wings, more flexibility over their assortment. With more flexibility came a little bit more guidelines. We were asking for them to go and achieve something specific with those added draft handles. And the one thing that we launched that I'm excited to see relaunch on August 1st is what we're calling our featured local brewery. And what that is we're asking our franchisees and our sports bar operators to identify the local breweries in their community that are pouring great beer, that are trending well, that resonate with our guests. We're asking them to identify those breweries and make sure they have them on tap in a Buffalo Wild Wings. But not only have them on tap, but then we're taking the extra step to call those breweries out on a featured part of our beverage menu. So our featured local brewery part of our beverage menu now takes up probably about the lower third of our featured panel on our beverage menu. And on that is a big call out of, you know, this local brewery that is down the street from your Buffalo Wild Wings, and then two products from that brewery, either two draft products or one draft in one package. And I'm really excited about the potential that that program has, because theoretically with over 1,200 different Buffalo Wild Wings across the country and over 8,000 breweries in our country right now, you know, we theoretically should have over 1,200 different versions of that featured local brewery when our menus roll out. So that's one thing that I'm really excited about, for how our company is going after that kind of that craft drinker and making sure that we're resonating with the local sports fan and the local community, is by also partnering with the local craft breweries through that feature section panel.
How long does that feature last?
Initially, it was to last 2 months. We're moving our beverage menu to a quarterly print. So those featured breweries will have that placement for 3 months at a time. And then we're going to be asking our sports bars to rotate the brewery that they select every 3 months.
Gotcha. But because we solicited some audience questions before this chat, and the questions that kept coming back were all, you know, like, what is your local craft strategy going forward? As the nation's largest on-premise craft beer retailer, how are you supporting local craft breweries and local communities? You know, this is like top of mind for a lot of our readers and a lot of the folks who watch Frontlines and listen to the Brewbound podcast. So I'm glad that you're addressing this. Anything else on the local craft that you can tell us?
Yeah. So, you know, Justin, when you and I first met probably 3 years ago, I asked you to publish my email address in Brewbound. And you're like, are you sure you want to do that? I'm like, yeah, I'm sure I want to do that. And I'll still put it out there. My email address is jmurphy@inspirebrands.com. Shoot me an email if you want to talk about how to get beer in a Buffalo Wild Wings. I will talk anybody who wants to help us sell more beer in a Buffalo Wild Wings. I will talk to. That is a value for us. And so even if I can't do anything from where I sit running the national program, because currently the lowest that I can program our beer is the state level, I can certainly connect you with the right people in the right markets, whether it be franchise owners, whether it be our local operators. I can connect you with those people to talk about what are the ways to get a tap handle at a Buffalo Wild Wings and what are the things that we're looking for. So, you know, for most of our locations are 30 handle draft systems. Of those 30 handles, 8 of those are available for the local operations team to plan and coordinate, which is more than 25% of their draft set. So, you know, we really leave a lot of power and ability for our local operators to make connections and partner with those local breweries. And I think probably, you know, too often the answer from chains is no. So that's probably why we don't get reached out to as often as I would like to see, is because the answer so often is, you know, no. And, you know, we only partner with these, you know, 5 or 6 breweries, and it's just kind of, you know, beating your head into a wall. We're open for business. Like, I really encourage people to be reaching out to not only myself, but to your local GM, talk to your bartender. If you know the district manager of Buffalo Wild Wings, talk to them. This is a focus for us moving forward. And quite frankly, it's the only way we win as a beer program, is to really connect and resonate with the local craft beer consumer. And to do that means partnering with all the great local craft breweries that are out there around the country.
What's that email address again?
jmurphy@inspirebrands.com.
Email the man. So Jason, one thing that I really remember from my, you know, career as a beer marketer is that B-Dubs is like the hallmark if you want to launch a sampling campaign. So like, I personally have worked on sampling campaigns that sent, you know, promotional people to Buffalo Wild Wings all around the country to get drinkers to try new products, because, you know, everybody in your stores is obviously interested in beer. But what does sampling like that look like in a post-COVID world? Have you guys put any guidelines in place for safety?
That's a good question. To be honest, we haven't really talked about it yet. So it's something that I'll need to connect with our team on and try to build on that. But yeah, you're right. I mean, sampling is a great way to get your product in front of people, especially in our restaurant on a, you know, a Saturday or a Sunday during football season. I would say the one thing that's been a real positive for our system over the last couple of years is the creation of an entire field marketing department across the country. I might get in trouble with some people at my company, but other people might love me for saying this. I think our field marketing department is probably the most important department in our company right now when it comes to trying to create that connection and create Buffalo Wild Wings as that local sports bar, that local hangout. But so that field marketing department has been very influential in helping create sampling programs across the country. And so having that asset in each individual market for our local craft brewery reps to be able to contact and really build that relationship with, I think is fantastic. You know, I always tell our supplier sales reps whenever I have conversations with them in intro meetings, the relationship that they can have with me is great. And I'll monitor sales and we can chat as frequently or as infrequently as they want. But there's only so much I can do from where I sit managing the national program. To me, the most important relationships they can build if I'm a supplier sales rep is with our field marketing team and with our operations representatives on the local level, because they're the ones who are on the street in our restaurants every day with the ability to work with our supplier partners to create these sampling programs that do wonders for a brand success in the B-Dubs.
I did a sampling video for your field marketing team a couple of years ago. If you want to go back and watch that awkwardness.
Yeah, I'll dig through the archives.
Yeah, let's see if we can run that on Frontlines this week.
Yeah.
Over the last 5 years, we saw sort of a proliferation of tap handles, and B-Dubs, I think, has an average of what, 30 or so?
Yeah, 30 per location on average.
So what I'm hearing from you really is that in the interim, there might be fewer things on, but in the long term, we're not going to see a retreat from that.
No, definitely not. You know, if we were to look at our overall draft system as a whole, and I've had conversations with Mark Young about this, and I saw his Frontlines video with you guys at the beginning, and there definitely is a long tail of beers that don't perform as well as they could at a Buffalo Wild Wings. So is that an issue? Yes. A lot of times the long tail of beer that doesn't perform well is one of two things. They're beers that are duplicative of better selling beers that are already on our draft lineup, or two, they're from, and this sounds counterintuitive, but they're from, or probably not what you would expect, but they're from the really cool hip craft breweries that are around the state that, that Buffalo Wild Wings is in. And we, quite frankly, don't have that guest yet, which is why I keep saying we're not changing our core consumer target, because if there's a cool craft beer bar down the street that's pouring this keg and they're selling, you know, 6 to 8 kegs a month of it, and I bring it into my sports bar and I'm only selling a keg a month, there's a problem there. There's a disconnect between the beers that we're bringing in and the beers that's selling well everywhere else. So there's a couple of different strategies to kind of attack that tap bloat that you might call. So one is making sure that we don't have too much duplicity on our lineups. So I shouldn't walk into any sports bars and see 10 light lagers or 10 IPAs. There's probably only enough business to go around for five or six of those. So let's make sure we have the right five or six and then really increase the rate of sale of the top selling brands that we have. That leaves us with handle space to bring in variety. So when I started at B-Dubs almost 3 years ago now, the one thing I told everyone, am I allowed to curse on this?
Yes.
I told people all I wanted to do at a B-Dubs is drink a fucking Saison. Like, that's all I wanted to do. Like, I wanted to eat wings and I wanted to drink a Saison, but you couldn't find it because it was, you'd walk into our sports bar and it was 10 light lagers, 10 IPAs, 5 wheat beers, like 3 ambers, a stout, Angry Orchard, and you're done. And that was a problem. We didn't have enough variety. So by eliminating kind of the duplicity in that lineup, we're allowing ourselves to open ourselves to products that may not sell well, but it attracts a different consumer than is what currently is coming in. So it's okay to have a Saison on tap. It's okay to have a sour on tap. It's okay to have a double IPA or a barrel-aged stout. I think the one thing we got caught up with too much was, you'd look at a product and it would be a 29th or 30th performer in our lineup. And you'd say, well, that's a bad product. You shouldn't have that on tap. Well, you got 30 handles. You're going to have a number one seller and you're going to have a number 30 seller and everything in between. Our challenge is figuring out what's the right products of 1 through 30. I'm totally okay with having a 30th selling product as long as it's the right selling product, which is probably going to be a sour or a barrel-aged stout. Are they going to move well? Probably not. Are they going to move fast enough to stay fresh? That's my first question. If the answer is yes, and you still have people ordering it, well, then it's the right product, because for the person who came in and wanted that, you satisfied them, and that might give them a reason to return. So that's one thing we're looking at to ensure that we're not, you know, engaging in tap bloat and making sure that, you know, we're still using these 30 handles to our advantage and making sure that we have fresh product on tap. The other thing that we're doing is looking beyond beer in areas that we can expand taps beyond beer. So you might see us looking at seltzers on tap. We're talking about how do we dedicate tap handles to wine. We're already doing some hard kombucha in Washington and Southern California. We're just exploring things like cocktails on tap. So that's also a way that we might try to better manage our draft systems. But going from 30 to a fewer number of tap handles will likely not happen anytime soon.
So what does an ideal tap lineup look like, either for you personally or for B-Dubs as a whole? What would you want to see for those 30 handles?
Oh, I mean, it's a good question, and it changes by market. So that was the one big thing that we changed with our beer program about 2 years ago, is instead of kind of having this one size fits all draft program where it was highly nationally mandated with very few options to our operators locally and regionally that we were implementing, we changed our beer program to be mandated state by state so that each state had the right products. So the example I'll give is with Mexican imports. You look at our draft program pre-2018, we had two Mexican imports everywhere. You can probably guess what those were. If you looked at the sales performance of those two Mexican imports in the state where I'm at, like Colorado, it was average for across the system. Two Mexican imports was probably the right amount. You look at states like, or areas like Southern California or states like Texas, those two Mexican imports were dominating sales, which tells me two Mexican imports probably isn't enough. Our local team is having to bring in other Mexican imports to satisfy that need when they probably shouldn't have to do that. So maybe those states require three or four Mexican imports for their mandates list. Then you look at a state like New Hampshire, Mexican imports don't really do much for us there. You know, we might need one, maybe no Mexican imports on tap, and we can satisfy those drinkers out of bottles or cans. Whereas New Hampshire over-indexes in European imports. So maybe we need to ensure that we have those products on tap versus dedicating tap handle space to Mexican imports. So really it's paying a lot of attention to data, we always say we want to make sure we have the right beer for the right guest at the right location. And so it's making sure that we're staying up with not only the trends in our location, but the trends in the general market and our target consumer in each individual market. Trying to properly build a good draft assortment from the top down for our mandates. So for my 22 of 30 mandates that we put out there, 10 of those are national, 12 of those are state by state. So those 12 state by state handles are really making sure I have the right regional products in those areas. And then really working closely with our local team to ensure that those 8 local handles will, taking a step back, making sure that those 12 handles that I manage state by state are the right ones for that state so that the local team doesn't have to go back in and mandate a top seller, because they should never have to use a handle for a top seller. That should be our job, is to figure out what those top sellers are. Then once you've done that, that frees up those 8 handles locally for our teams to go in and make sure they're partnering with the best local and hyper-local breweries for their assortment. So it's kind of a cop-out way of answering your question, but really what we're looking to do is we want to make sure we have the right mix of domestic import and craft. We want to make sure we have the right mix of national, regional, local, and hyper-local. And we want to make sure that we have a wide variety of styles. And to do that is something that we look at each individual state and really try to get even market specific to ensure that we've got the right assortments at each level of our organization.
Are hard seltzers becoming part of that mandate as far as the, 10 handles that you guys, I know that there's not a lot of like draft hard seltzer out there, but are they mandated in different ways? How do you work that in?
Yeah, not yet. We're still placing all of our hard seltzer focus on package for the most part. You know, I see all the numbers that come out about how well hard seltzer's doing and you know, how White Claw continues to be the number one growth brand in the country. We don't see much of that yet in the on-premise. Unfortunately, I would love to tap into some of that success. But, you know, we have both White Claw and Truly as national package mandates in our system. And so far, it just doesn't do much for us. We are testing hard seltzer drafts in a few states. Again, this was part of those March 1st mandates that we really haven't been able to see any wins or losses from yet. So we are testing a craft hard seltzer in Texas, and we're testing Truly hard seltzer in a couple states, and we're going to gauge the guest reaction to it and go from there. We haven't necessarily discussed cocktails yet, although I shouldn't say that. We have discussed it. We just haven't necessarily figured out the right way to implement it yet. And we'll just go where the market goes, because we'd love to see some of that success. We do have an LTO coming up this summer when we relaunch our beverage menu on August 1st that will give a little bit more prominence to White Claw. So we're excited to see what that might do for us and see if we can drive some White Claw and hard seltzer sales to actually make a dent in our overall bev alc sales.
When you're making room for those alternative alcohol products, including hard kombucha or seltzer, what products does it come at the expense of? Is it, you know, a craft beer product that potentially isn't selling well? Is it a cider? Where do you sort of look for that, you know, that fit and cut?
it goes back to what I said earlier about trying not to be too duplicitous of our draft system. So if I take a look at what we have in the lineup and I've got, if I'm mandating from my 22, four IPAs, well, I know there's probably going to be a couple local IPAs that are selected from their eight that they have. So from that list of four, probably you get up to six, seven, maybe even eight. So you know, that would be a place, but also light lagers. We over-index on light lagers on tap. So it could come from a light lager. Honestly, it all comes to making sure that we're following the data trends within each individual state as we're building each lineup. I go through each state individually and I look at what's selling, I look at what's not selling. And sometimes I have to make some tough decisions based off of trying to build a draft lineup that provides the best assortment. It might come from local craft, it might come from our national partners. You know, we've seen a lot of change in our draft program over the last few years. And what has happened from that is we've invited a lot more partners into our draft assortment, draft mandates, which means other partners lost handles during those changeovers. So, you know, those conversations are never easy and those decisions are never fun or easy. That's, you know, the hardest part of my job is, you know, calling and telling a supplier that I've built a relationship with that they're losing handles for one reason or another. But, you know, what we really try to do is take the emotion and relationship out of it and really look at the data. And really lean into that and try to figure out how do we build the best assortment for our guests.
So Jason, I know you said that takeout was doing pretty well for you guys and everybody was really pleasantly surprised with it. And then we started adding beer to that. How do you guys make sure that beer is a bigger part of your to-go sales?
Yeah, I think one thing that we're going to do better is figure out how to advertise beer to go more. And that's an area of importance moving forward. So it's something that we're testing, trying to figure out what that messaging strategy looks like. Is it targeting guests during their online checkout? Is it a social campaign? Is it an email campaign? Is it an expanded product lineup? We're really kind of going to take a 360 approach to what off-premise sales look like. And so one thing that COVID did accelerate in our business is the establishment of an e-commerce and off-premise team. So that was a team that was announced within our organization just a few weeks ago, and one that myself and the entire beverage team will partner with closely to figure out what's the right triggers and targets for someone who's looking for an off-premise experience and how can we attach BevElk to that, making sure that we're competitive with C-store and liquor store, but also hitting the margins that we're expected to as a brand and for a company.
Well, and legally, I'm sure that's really difficult because we've been tracking this and it seems like some states will enact laws where alcohol can be delivered. I think Oklahoma is one of them. They just made alcohol home delivery permanent, but they've excluded third-party delivery platforms. So I'm sure that's got to be really hard for you guys. What are you doing with those third-party partners? Are you partnering with like DoorDash and Uber Eats and Grubhub, or do you work out your own system?
Absolutely nothing is what we're doing with them so far. So to your point, it is really difficult trying to figure out how to build those programs that line up to each city's laws, county's laws, state laws. You know, we found through this process that there's everything seems, you know, the same and equal in a state like California, except we'll find one county that doesn't allow for this or one city that doesn't allow for that. So that's been a real, I guess I'd say, nightmare in getting this whole program up and running. So what we've tried to do to ease complexity of programs and try to create some efficiency in messaging is to really almost create a one-size-fits-all program and go to the lowest common denominator that works for our entire country. I'd say that as we get back to a little bit more of a normal and understand how states either relax or don't relax their BevElk to-go laws, that'll give us a little bit more time to understand how we want to build a BevElk to-go program moving forward. But there's still so much unknown of whether these states are going to pull back these loosened restrictions or not. And so I think we're taking advantage of what's been allowed to us to date. But once we have a better understanding of what those laws look like moving forward, we'll be able to build out a more holistic program that maybe targets the states that are allow for delivery or don't, that allow for messaging online or not, that allow for, you know, consumer takeout. We'll just figure that out.
So with draft being such a huge part of your brand hallmark, I mean, are crowlers or growlers from restaurants in the mix for takeout service?
It's something that, you know, that's something that's been on my mind ever since I started at BeatUp. So it's something I've wanted to test for about 3 years. We haven't gotten there yet. It is something that's still on the horizon. We've got some operators who reach out to us. And I shouldn't say that Buffalo Wild Wings as a company do not do growlers. We have some franchisees who have had seen a lot of success with crowlers going outside their sports bars. So it's something that I think we can take a page from our franchisees on. Our franchisees oftentimes are testing things well before we are, just because, you know, as a company, we've got 600 and some locations that we have to look at from a company side and 1,200 nationally. Our franchisees who have 2-3 locations are able to be a little bit more nimble and get things out the door quicker. So yeah, crowlers are not something we've done from a company side yet, but is definitely something I'm interested in testing where we can legally.
That's awesome. Do you have any other innovations or different ways of doing things that you guys are considering at this time or getting ready to roll out?
Good question. From a draft beer side and from a beer side, I'd say no. Most of the innovation in beer has been more towards writing our assortment. You know, the things that have been innovative to us as of late is, you might find this crazy, but we're looking to test a flight program. We don't offer beer flights in our system. So right before we shut down all of our restaurants, we were about 6 weeks away from rolling out that test. And so we'll figure out what that looks like once we start to reopen and have a little bit more of a normal draft cadence. But flights should be coming to a Buffalo Wild Wings soon. So we'll catch up with 1995 there.
My thoughts are with your bartenders. Pouring flights is hard. So.
Oh yeah, no, I bartended for 8 years, and that was the one thing I hated doing was flights. It was the worst.
But the markup is great.
And you know, that's the good part of having the right assortment, right? Is then you could have beers that people want to try for them. I would say the reason why we don't have flights is because our assortment 5 years ago probably didn't lend itself to guests coming in and wanting to have a flight. You don't necessarily want a flight of 4 light lagers. It's not what people are looking for. But they'll come in and order those in tall and copious amounts. But other things that we've been looking for innovation-wise as a beverage team, you know, Buffalo Wild Wings is really this place about sharing and connecting and coming in with friends and gathering and being all together. So we've really been focused as a beverage team on how do we create those shareable experiences with friends when they come to watch a football game for, you know, 3 hours or 6 hours, or do a marathon with us during March Madness. We've got a lot of ideas. A lot of those have been put on pause just with, you know, the health concerns that come with COVID and what is the guest perception or the guest willingness to want to share beers with their friends tableside. So we still have a lot of those ideas that we want to put in place, but we're going to hit pause on that for a little bit just to understand what guest reception is coming back. Other innovations come a lot more on the cocktail and wine side, to be honest. We're really trying to bring our cocktail program into, I guess, more of a classic cocktail platform and innovating that way. We have a great counterpart who's building some fantastic recipes for us from a cocktail side, so we can grow that mix. And then, you know, really making sure that our wine list is something that people actually want versus, hey, we've got a white or a red. Well, what is it? Well, it's a white or a red. So making sure we have some good name brands there. And then the wine on tap and cocktails on tap is something we're looking at as well that would be, you know, in our innovation platform.
Well, I see Odell is out in your neck of the woods canning wine at this moment. So maybe something to look into, which I'm sure you already have. Before we let you get out of here, though, this has been great. Jess has 2 hot button issues she's going to ask you about.
Yeah. Let's do it.
All right. Tell the people what your favorite wing flavor sauce combo is.
Cool. So I think I get a lot of flack for this because my favorite wing sauce isn't actually a wing sauce. It's a dry rub. I like our Desert Heat dry rub the most. If I had to go for a sauce, I'll go for a medium buffalo. Or I don't know if you all have gotten the chance to try our original buffalo sauce yet. It's a true OG New York buffalo. It's like butter and Frank's and it's delicious. Our OG Buffalo is really good. This is going to sound really fat kid of me. I'm just a fan of our blue cheese. Like, I want to get a dry rub on wings and dunk it in our blue cheese. And the wing is the vehicle to get blue cheese in my mouth. And I have no shame there.
I don't judge you in the least. I really miss restaurant wings. I've tried twice at home to make them since we've been home and it's terrible. So I'm just ready to go out and eat a whole basket of bone-on wings. Which brings me to my next question. Are boneless wings real wings or are they just glorified chicken nuggets?
Well, they're 100% not chicken nuggets. They are definitely wings. If you want chicken tenders, we can make those for you. We got hand-breaded chicken tenders. But boneless wings are definitely wings, and 50% of the time, my wing of choice.
Nice.
We actually, to throw a little bit of love to our food team, we just revamped our boneless chicken wings. They've got less breading, more meat, and they're nicely marinated. They're super juicy. They're super tender. I would recommend, if you have not tried them and you are a boneless wing hater, which there are a lot out there, that you give our boneless wings a try.
Nice. The closest one is too far to make like takeout still be really good at home. So I'm just waiting for like next week when we can go out to eat again.
Brewbound Frontlines, where you get all your hot button issues answered.
And there you go. That was Brewbound Frontlines, which you can catch every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern on brewbound.com and on Brewbound's Facebook and YouTube pages. This particular episode was not live. We had to pre-record due to some scheduling conflicts, so we couldn't take audience questions, but we will be back next week with another live episode ready to take all your burning questions from the brewers who are in our backyard. Next Thursday, we will have leaders from four Massachusetts breweries who all saw really big volume gains last year. We've got executives and leaders from Wormtown, Jack's Abbey, Castle Island, and Vitamin C. We'll check in with these guys and try to get the secrets of their success from last year and ask how they've been doing since the pandemic started. If you can't catch the conversation live, you can always hear it here on the Brewbound podcast on your preferred podcast platform. As always, thank you to all of you guys for listening to this week's guests, Marcus, Kimberly, Jason, and thanks to Justin and the Brewbound BevNet audiovisual crew, Josh, Joe, and Ryan. Apparently, almost everyone needs to have a name that starts with J to work here. We will see you guys next week. In the meantime, stay safe and healthy, and we'll see you soon.